A word that gets used a lot at a radio station is the verb to broadcast. Ever wonder about the past and future? Tempted to say, I broadcasted my show, or my show will be broadcasted? Well, actually, most standard English dictionaries say that the past and future tenses of the word broadcast are exactly that, broadcast. And so, if in doubt, it's probably okay to say broadcasted, and there are a couple of dictionaries that allow for that, but you're probably safest saying, I have broadcast my show. You're listening to A Gramophone with Daniel Wolfe.
So they tell me, I can't recall who said it. I know
it's 2 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Kingston, Ontario.
Have you here. Lovely to see such a good turnout, and thanks for everyone joining online as well. We're the co-presidents for this year's Queen's Corporate Law Club. Ben, we'd just like to take a moment to recognize that Queen's University is situated on traditional Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory. To acknowledge this traditional territory is to recognize its longer history, one predating the establishment of the earliest European colonies. It is also to acknowledge this territory's significance for the Indigenous peoples who lived and continue to live upon it. These were tied to the land and continued territory and its other inhabitants today. The Kingston Indigenous community continues to reflect the area's Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee roots community, and there are first peoples from other nations across Turtle Island present here today as well.
Fantastic. So thank you so much, Laura. The Queen's Corporate Law Club's mission is to educate the Queen's Law community about corporate law. The Law 80 panel and standing to corporate law. This year, we're beyond thrilled to have Erica, Sam, and Alice join us as our guest speakers. Before we dive into it, though, I'd like to take a moment to thank the Class of 80 who sponsor this event each year, Professor Henderson and Natalie for bringing this event together. But now, without further ado, I'll pass it off to Laura to give a little bit more of a background into our exceptionally accomplished guest speakers.
Yay. So we're very excited to have you all. Thank you so much. Starts, we have Sam DiGiuseppe. Sam is an associate in the Banking and Specialty Finance Group at Castles, Brock and Blackwell LLP. Sam's practice focuses on a broad range of domestic and international financing transactions, acting for both borrowers and lenders in secured and unsecured lending transactions, bilateral and syndicated facilities, and project finance facilities. Sam is also developing experience working with resource companies in the mining sector, and Sam received his JD from Queen's Law in 2022.
Fantastic. Up next, we have Alice Abbott. She has extensive experience leading legal departments in the financial sector, serving as Global General Counsel for GPS Capital Markets and AFEX, as well as General Counsel for Jamieson Bank, which was acquired by AFEX, and for the Mercantile Exchange Corporation. Alice specializes in legal department management, compliance, global regulatory roadmapping, and litigation management. She earned an LLB from Queen's Law and an MBA from Queen's University.
And last but not least, we have Erica Young. Erica currently practices. She plays a key role in supporting and overseeing from a legal perspective the investment dealer and mutual fund dealer operation and wealth management lines of business at Canada Life. She obtained her JD from the University of Toronto and a Bachelor of Commerce from Queen's.
Fantastic. So we're going to dive right into it. We have a couple of questions prepared for you all, and maybe we can just go starting from Sam, Alice, and Erica, and then we can switch it up as we go along. But the first question is, the first question is, for many gaining exposure into the corporate law world, for you, what does the wide umbrella of business law entail, and why did you choose to narrow your focus into the banking and finance sector specifically?
Okay, so, I mean, business law is a huge umbrella, right? So it's banking work, corporate governance, there's regulatory aspects to it. So there's so much that falls under that umbrella. For me, so I do lending is what we call it at Castles. I think it's referred to different things at different places, but essentially secured financings. What drew me to that particular practice was sort of structure of the deals that I was seeing as an articling student. I'm obviously very junior and don't have a ton of experience. I'm about to be a third year associate, but I liked the pace of the collaborative it was with opposing counsel as opposed to, say, like an M&A or a securities deal, because we're drafting loan documents that govern a relationship for a really long time. There's a lot more collaboration between sides, which I really liked. And then there was also, I felt a great deal of mentorship from that particular group at my firm, which is what drew me to it in particular.
Well, for me, I mean, I can't add anything to what Eric, how we've defined the umbrella, but for not curated. Business law chose me. I was not as intentional. It was mostly chance that my first job after clerking, I clerked. I was at the Department of Justice, and it was an incredibly high volume of caseload and a very, very narrow focus. So I was going to federal court, but in a very narrow slice of law, which at that time was immigration and refugee work, appeals mostly. And I just realized there was not much. I was not going to learn much. There wasn't going to be much opportunity for me because I could see it was a very political place, and I had not learned to play the political game yet. And there was nothing special about me. So there was nothing that I really, no way that I distinguished myself in law school. Nobody said, oh, she'll be great at that. I still felt like I was unconfident, floundering quite a bit, couldn't find my niche. So I felt that the best way to broaden my skill set and make something special, make something that's particularly different about me, was I did it the hard way and I went back and did my MBA at Queen's. And it was the full term, the 2-year residential MBA. And it was a real learning experience, but I did learn things that I did not know. And that combination of law and MBA just gave me the skill set and also made me much more attractive to certain types of employers. And that's basically how I ended up in business law. Yeah.
I think I share your view, Alice. A lot of it is sort of circumstance, like opportunities that came up, files that I was staffing when I was a young lawyer, and job opportunities that have come up prior to my current position that sort of steered me towards business. I do have an undergrad in business, so I think I'm minded to that way. I'm the daughter of a small business owner. My parents own a fish and chip restaurant. To me, business always seemed very tangible. It was something I could understand. It was the way I understood the world. Advice early in my career when I was in private practice and I was a commercial litigator, I was advising largely people that seemed like my dad, right? Like people who own businesses who just had business problems, like a dispute with their landlord or their employee or with a vendor or whatever it is, their business partner. And so I think at the early stages of my career, in that respect, it felt like law, and it felt a lot more real than the part of law school, which I did love, which was equally rewarding and exciting, but sometimes felt a little bit disconnected from the world that I grew up in or the world that I felt like I dealt with day to day in my day to day. So outside of school. So that's kind of how I ended up in business. And I would say it kind of built since every sort of career juncture I've had, every change in job from being in private practice and litigation. Then I moved to a regulator, a self-regulatory organization. And I was there for almost 7 years. And at that time, it was focused specifically on securities. I was at the IROC, which is at the time, now it's called Zero. So they're regulators for investment dealers and mutual fund dealers. So it was a bit intentional that I understood, but it was also just a great working opportunity. And then I developed an expertise in that. And since then, on utilizing that specific, a mixture of a bit of intentionality, but a bit of just luck and
off spots.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. And you all have such different paths of getting to where you are today. And it's really interesting for us in the room to hear how that can kind of play out. So with that in mind, we're curious if there are any key moments or choices along the way that particularly helped you shape your career. So maybe we can go reverse order, maybe Erica first.
The biggest, and so just to your point, one of the best parts I say about being a lawyer is the fact that you will get this variety. You will get folks who said, I know exactly what I want to do. And they summer article, become a partner, and that's what they do. And that's amazing. You will also get the opposite. You will also get people who said, like, I did this for a while. I stopped practicing law. I worked in the business. I worked in compliance. And then I went back to doing law. And I think that's the best part about getting a legal degree is that it doesn't, like, you get that and you develop a basket of skills and you can actually apply. Narrowing, it's actually like seeing it as like opening up the world of opportunities and including in roles that you didn't even realize you could do. So certainly in law school, I think my current practice, I do a lot of things that I didn't even realize when I was a student I could do, and the type of Well, one of the key junctures for me just professionally was I summered an article at a Bay Street firm and I was not hired back. And it truly felt just absolutely devastating, right? Like my life is over. I'm never going to be a lawyer. This is awful. Notwithstanding the fact that like I was called at the same time, you know, like you finish your articles, you're called to the bar, you are officially a lawyer. And like, it takes so long. Like all of you who are in it now, just think about how many hoops you have to jump through. We were talking about, you know, midterms and doing your first course, your first exam. But like even up to this stage, doing well in under extracurriculars, applying, doing the LSAT, getting in, then you have to finish and then you have to apply for a job and then you have to finish your articles or you do LPP and all of that. And you just go through so many hoops. So it really felt devastating, but it actually ended up being a great turning point for me to remind myself of what I just said. Like there's so many options at the start and I finally am called. All the dedicated study and discipline, and you finally get called. And actually it meant like I could do it on really thinking about what do I like? What do I not like? What do I want to explore? And so that ended up being a great way for me to also forced me to be a lot more intentional and not just kind of like feel like I'm kind of floating along and just going with the flow. Like, oh, everyone's doing OCIs. I'll do OCIs. Oh, everyone's applying to these firms. I don't know the difference. I guess I'll apply to them. It sounds like a good plan. Instead to be like, what are lawyers I respect and what do they do? And maybe I should talk to them in terms of giving me confidence to date in every position since, where if I suddenly no longer am interested in what I do or I'm craving something different, I have confidence to say, well, it's time to move. It's time to think of something else. It's time to like bring out the resume and start having coffee dates and look online and look for a new opportunity because I don't need to be constrained because someone told me I should be doing it. It's the opposite. That I have all these skills and I'm only gaining more experience the more years I practice and I have a lot of flexibility to do it. So I think that early, but building a little resilience and building, be able to sort of take my own career into my own hands and actually make intentional choices about the type of work I wanted to do. That was important.
Yeah, I had an experience like, in the sense that other than getting my MBA, that was a key moment because also having like charities compliance. So I also worked for, before it was IROC, was the IDA.
Of course,
and that's
the
when
last
I was there.
Year, yeah. The last year,
And I also, so this, that focus on securities compliance really opened up for employers, right? Mm. So you're now good for regulators. I worked for TD Waterhouse managing their street. So I was of interest to them because I had lots of securities compliance experience from the regulator side. So I decoded that black box. I was the black box, you know, so normally they don't know what happens. That's what's the regulator thinking? Well, I can tell you. So
I say that about like 10 times a day.
And also then I, you know, as my career kind of meandered on, I mean, I was between gigs and I could do security. I could do compliance consulting. Right. You know, I was writing policy, advising, investigations, all sorts of that basket of skills, just amazing. So it was, in terms of key junctures, was that chance of starting to develop a specialty in securities compliance. And the other key juncture, I would say, is getting my first job in foreign exchange. And foreign exchange is like an alternate payments platform. And it also has aspects of sales and forward contracts are like securities. So, and so getting that first job in foreign exchange, that was the first time I felt like, oh, this is an industry I can be super good at. I'm really interested in. And it truly was a business still in the sense that leaders were still trying to grow foreign exchange management and C-suite. They're still trying to grow the business. They need that legal advice so badly. Yep. So it wasn't a trodden path. And then all it comes along with all the things that are running a business, the things you were describing with your father. Vendor management, terminations, recruiting, HR, licensing, all the things. And so that was the other, I would say, juncture is coming into an industry, though, truly.
So as far as like key moments go, obviously, again, like I'm only 3 years into this. And so it's hard to I don't know that there have been many, but I should clarify that I certainly did not come to law school with the intention of being like a bank. For like background on me, I did my undergraduate degree in musical theater and then sang and danced for 10 years for a living and then went to law school. So I was interested in litigation. I felt like that was something that would be more suited to my skills and also wasn't totally certain that a career on Bay Street was right for me and kind of did the recruit. I appreciate a lot of you are probably like in the middle of that process right now, whether or not I would connect with any of these law firms because I wasn't sure that Who I was pretty baked in by that point. I was in my 30s. I am who I am, and I wasn't sure whether or not that would fit into a corporate mold. And so I think a turning point for me, so I went through the recruit, found some people at a great place that I really connected with. And I think the turning point for me would have been in my summer, in work for the first month and a half, and then quickly realizing that I had absolutely no interest in doing that as a career, and sort of shifting my approach and then making connections with mentors. And you'll probably get this experience for all of you as well. Like, people you meet along the way will totally shape your career and the way that it goes. And so, to be honest, if I had ended up at a different firm with different lawyers, I don't know that I would be practicing banking and specialty finance. And so that was the sort of key point, was of realizing I didn't want to do litigation, this group at Castles.
Thank you all. It's very comforting to know that there are so many different things that you can do with a law degree. But I think sometimes students ask how to figure out where they belong. And so, whether that be at a big firm, a mid-sized firm, or in-house, and from your perspective, what should students practice and any advice you might have to all of us? And we can start with Sam this time.
I think it's easy to like be sitting here with a job telling you what to prioritize, as you are literally in the middle of the recruit. What I tried to prioritize when I was in that position was, like I sort of said, finding a place where I felt like I could bring myself to my full self to work every day. I think it's a hard job. Parts of it are amazing, and it's not always sort of as scary as people might want to make it seem, particularly a career on Bay Street, but it can be, right? Like, long hours and all of that. And I think if you're not doing it with a team of people who respect you, even when you're junior, I think that just makes it so much harder. So really, it's hard to feel like you're in the driver's seat. And I'm speaking specifically about the like formal recruitment process. There's an amazing CDO here. Mike and Julie are amazing. Talk to them about all of the alternative options that there are, because truly, like, obviously there are. If you're going the formal recruitment path, remember that you are also looking for the place that you could end up working for the rest of your career. And you are just as much in the driver's seat in that way. And just really, like, trust your gut. If you are getting, if what you're receiving from a firm is not, then you shouldn't work there. Again, easy for me to say, that would be my advice. You don't have to do the recruit. Like, there are so many. I have friends who did not get jobs from the recruit who are way smarter and way more successful than I am. Like, it is just sort of that conveyor belt thing that you probably feel like you're trapped on, but really utilize the CDO because they're amazing.
I just to echo what you said, the concept of choice in your career is pretty limited early years. It really is. It's really, I mean, it's for me, it was a lot of managing situations that were either negative or neutral and trying to make, no, honestly, it really was just trying to make the best choice from here that values you. But that didn't happen to me for the first time. Yeah, no, seriously. You just really want to survive. And again, being looking to your next jump, should it not be working out, or you're be prepared for your next push. Sorry to say there's not a lot of choice early years. Maybe things are changing. I don't know. Although I think I do know to a certain extent, because I worked with kids in the law practice program, hired a lot of those. I have an idea of what goes on. But I would say the most important thing is do not limit yourself to traditional legal roles. There are so many legal adjacent roles. They're not looking for a lawyer. There's so many legal adjacent roles. Don't worry if you don't practice as a lawyer or your job doesn't say counsel or whatever in those first few years. You are picking up skills. So there's, like we talked, policy and procedure, editing, investigations, even HR advisory. And when you're doing HR work, you're learning the rules in different jurisdictions and terminations and so on. So there are those. And also non of lawyers. So governments, we got lots of levels here, regulators, administrative tribunals and bodies. So looking for lawyers at a lower level. Like, you're really in a sweet spot between 1 and 3 years and maybe 1 and 5 years. 3 to 5 years, you're in an amazing sweet spot. And I know that must feel like a million years out right now. Sorry. But the 3 to 5 years I found were such a sweet spot for hiring, because you're really getting a lot of knowledge. Like you're probably just, you've got a brain full of experience, but your price point is still good. So I hire a lot of lawyers. And so you're really, you are really, you're just at an amazing juncture right now. So be open to non-traditional legal employers, unions, hospitals, the OBSI, the Ombuds for Banking and Services and Insurance, Banking, Securities, and thank you, Privacy Commission, that kind of thing. Just do not only look at law firms, honestly. And just like sneak peek, one of the very early decisions I, and one of the few early decisions I made as I bounced along the sea of being a lawyer was, I didn't want to work in private practice. I articled in private practice in Ottawa, and I had such a fear of clients and such a lack of confidence. I just thought I will not survive in private practice. I mean, I have nothing to offer and make mistakes. So no, but that was a decision I made early on. So, I mean, early on I had cut off that whole world of private practice, and maybe I'm la, la, la to you guys right now, but there for you. And then slightly more structured than private practice, because I really did wonder, what am I going to do in private practice? I don't have any knowledge. I didn't go, I mean, I had good articles, but I couldn't walk away saying any particular area interested me, or any particular partner loved me to help them with their family practice or anything. You know, just there's many options as a business lawyer.
That's such a great list. Like, thanks, Alice.
That's really good, cool, man.
I share everyone's, both of your views. I'm to your point that I don't think it needs to be, I think your need, because I had very different needs. At the beginning, I just wanted a job. I had, was broke and I needed a job, and I just needed money to pay back my loans, and the bank was calling. So sometimes that means you just take whatever job will pay you the most. And that's okay, because at that point in your life, that may be, or other times in your life, that may just be it. And you will, to your point, Alice, tolerate not feeling like you're being valued or being worked to the bone, or later in your career you may be like, absolutely not, I will not stand for that, because you are able to make those trade-offs. It's just, sometimes it is trade-offs, right? So sometimes it is not a perfect fit, but you know what, it's great. I think one mentor I had put it perfectly to say, sometimes you have to think about your role not as where you're going to, which may be the stepping stone to the next job. And the moment I thought of a career that way, it opened it up to say, all right, this isn't perfect, but honestly, it's good. Like, I, when I'm here, I'm going to get great skills, great mentorship, and I'll pay back my loans. And then I'll be so much more free than the next job to say, all right, I really want more balance in my life. I speak very personally because I was in private practice for 5 years. I really enjoyed it. It was tremendously fun, to be honest. I was on my feet. I was in court. I was dealing with clients. It was dynamic and incredibly intellectually stimulating. I worked with extremely bright lawyers out, and I was tired and I was sick of, like, I think my worst memory was, it was like Monday of Thanksgiving around Toronto, crying, interviewing witnesses, crying. And I had to leave dinner with my family to be like, well, I have to go interview this witness. And I had to go bother this poor person who's like themselves during Thanksgiving and be like, let's talk about that awful business dispute. And can you please tell him? I don't want to do this anymore. It was fun. It was fun. And I really enjoyed it at some point, and I don't like it anymore. And then I thought, okay, well, now my matrix has changed. I don't value, it doesn't matter so much that it's like always different. I was so worried about being bored and just doing the same thing. And I absolutely never, ever, 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 ever did the same thing. Every single day was different. I wasn't, so I was like, I actually really would love to have some structure. I would love to do the same thing every day. I would love to know in 3 months what my day is like, because in litigation, I could never predict. I absolutely could never predict. So I went the exact opposite. I went to work at a regulator, which I had like complete control, really, almost complete control over my time. And that was what was most valuable at that time. And then I did that for 7 years, and I said, actually, I think I'm ready for a little bit more diversity and a little bit more excitement. And so then I ended up back in industry. But that just goes to show your priorities may change over time, and they can change. Judgment to say at one point in your life, you may prioritize making the most amount of money possible because you have to pay your bills. That's life. That's going to school and going to spending a lot of money on school. And then at other times to say, no, I don't want, I will take a huge pay cut, because opportunity to work at a not-for-profit where they don't pay well, but I will be providing legal services to a matter, like an issue I really care about. So I just think that's important, is that your, what it is that you're valuing, what it is you're looking for may evolve over time, and that's life.
Yeah, I think that, and just to supplement what I said, and I think that is sort of what I was getting at, if not in mine was a clunkier way of saying it, but like that whole sort of thing of prioritizing was at that stage, what was important to me in finding an employer was as a man, it was really important for me to find a place that I worked, that I felt comfortable at. That was for me, bottom line was, it was more important to me than the area of law that I practice, because I'm sure most of you probably are like, I like everything. And practice is so much different than law school. And it's hard to really know. And so while you're going through this process, it is important to like reflect on what is important to you and then try to steer yourself in that direction as best you can.
Really interesting, because going back to your point, kind of everything that people prioritize, it's so individualistic to that person and it can change through life. So, but it's definitely really refreshing to know that life tends to just work itself out. So that's helpful. I know some of us doing the 2-hour recruit right now probably feel like the ship is sinking a little bit. So nice to know that there's still some hope. Shifting gears a little bit, business law is an area of the law that's constantly evolving with shifts in the economy, regulation, and industry trends. What are some changes that have had the biggest impact on your work, years of the industry?
Okay. Well, actually, there's one not, I wanted to, one change that's not business related that really shaped my career was, there was a Supreme Court of Canada decision by Madam Justice Bertha Wilson, who you may have heard of. I don't really know what you kids learn these days. But it meant that hearings by refugee claimants who make their claim in Canada had to be made in person. And this grew a whole new industry of hearings, appeals, judicial review. And that led to the need for a ton more lawyers in the Department of Justice. And I was part of that crew of, there was 20 or 30 lawyers who got hired all at once just because of this, that decision had such an impact. So that was one major change that directed my career. The other was the growing emphasis on avoiding the devastation of money laundering and terrorist financing, and realizing that money laundering takes place in so many areas. I don't know if anybody's taking any classes related to that, but the onion kind of got bigger. At first it was just the banks, and then it was the real estate agents, the jewelers, the precious metals, the money service businesses, and so on. So there was this greater global issue of money laundering. There's been the rise of the popularity of non-bank financial institutions, payments institutions, all those that didn't really exist before, bank and credit union. And now it's their assessments and alternate investments and sending money and so on. And then the last thing is, I think, is the growing concern with privacy and data protection. I mean, Canada is so far behind the European Union, where they had the experience of the Second World War, and that these meticulous records were kept of people, and of course the Nazis got them and were able to wreak havoc with having this private information available in such a neat little form. So the European Union is miles ahead with protecting private data and private information and the autonomy of people to not exist anywhere. And that's the other thing that I think's really made a big change in the and did you want me to move on to like future changes or
sure.
So what I think is probably going to make the biggest difference, the impacts that'll have the greatest influence on the business world coming up are cryptocurrency is finding its way in the world, both as a currency and as an investment. And the regulators have been dancing around it, threatening to regulate. We're going to regulate, but I don't really think they know what they're going to regulate until cryptocurrency finds its place in the market. So that's, I think, going to be opportunity. If you want to gain a specialty, maybe look something like that. The other thing is online business regulation. Are designed for where's the consumer? Where's the seller? Where's the stuff being sold? Let's look at that thing that's being sold, be it a car or whatever, intangibles. And so how are we going to protect consumers? How are we going to punish, wrongdoers? What's going to be protected exactly? So I think that's going to be the biggest emerging area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alice says resonates because I think we're very like adjacent in similar industries. Certainly that like the management of what they call crypto asset trading platforms, that was a major policy project I worked on when I was at Ciro at IROC. And it is a great burgeoning area. I would say though, there's a lot of old concepts being made new, particularly in capital markets. Sometimes it's the same old scam. It's the same, it's wash trading. It's whatever the same old scam you learn of and you, all the wrongdoing, all the types of fraud, just repackaged in a different form. But in the industry that I support and that I practice in, which is securities law, some of the biggest changes are really, there's a giant policy project of the securities commissions across the country, as well as at the time, the two self-regulated, at the time it was IROC and the MFDA. And this was a total rethinking of the way that investors interacted with investment dealers, mutual fund dealers. So those are the end capital markets. And that includes the individuals, the advisors who give how you should invest your money, what mutual funds or what securities, what stocks and equities you should buy. Starting to sort of seep into other product areas like insurance products, like segregated funds. It's starting to infiltrate the way and directly influence the way that these industries are structured. You're seeing a lot of consolidation, not just of the regulator, but also on the in business side. And really, it's about a lot of the relationship between people giving advice and investors, because it was very traditional that it would be someone would sell you a mutual fund and then they thanks very much, like selling you an insurance policy, I'll never talk to you again. As an individual investor, on your phone during this call, you can open an account, online discount brokerages, and you can just buy and sell your own. You can buy a unit in a mutual fund. You can buy and sell securities pretty much frictionless, right? Like it's pretty much frictionless.
Yeah.
And so I think that evolution in my industry is tremendous. There is both increased scrutiny and increased responsibility over the individuals giving advice mixed with the rise of different types of products like cryptocurrencies mixed with changing nature of advice. The fact that individuals can get their own advice, they can go on TikTok, they can go on third people giving them advice, they can execute, they can access markets directly. And there's an AI element. So I think certainly it's an exciting time to be in my industry because there's all these things, all of these influences that are really changing between individual investors and how they make. And lastly, everybody now, your responsibility to save for your retirement is tremendously important. And it's really your responsibility. It's been responsibility to an individual responsibility. So there's, on top of all that mix, there is this intense pressure to say, I better start saving or else money. So I just think altogether, it makes for a really vibrant and interesting practice. It's constantly changing, constantly new things. And, and that's not even to talk about the other things you mentioned, Alice, which is how to protect fraud, how to protect really are in the mix. And again, personally, like in my practice, that's what I advise on all of those areas. So it's certainly interesting from a practice area, but a ripe area for a lot of regulatory scrutiny. And
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add.
Like, I don't think I've been doing it long enough. I'm not that market trends impact my practice. Sort of simply, like, people are always looking to borrow money and there are always people who want to lend money. There was some fear at the beginning of this year about some of the cross-border work that we do because of the new American administration's approach to international trade. But that didn't actually having much of an impact, at least not on our work. But otherwise, I completely defer to this side of the of the table.
Well, thank you all.
It's really interesting to see kind of the market trends and how things have changed over time and how they're going to continue to change. And I guess the next question is, what do you think are the skills that have best served you in your career, kind of adapting to these changes? And maybe if there are any skills that you had wished you began developing earlier in your career, maybe kind of looking, we could start with Sam.
Yeah, as a junior lawyer, skills that you build in law school are really applicable, not necessarily the like substantive stuff that you learn here, but the tools that you're building through your substantive learning will be really applicable. So like things like balancing competing demands,
manage workload, reading large volumes, really good attention to detail, like all of those things are a lot of it, in my experience, has been learned on the job. So like, do I wish I took this secured financing course that Queen, but I think so much of it is learned when you're there from the lawyers teaching you, but you build a really great base in law school. So don't feel like, I know people will often say, practice is so different than law or than law school. And it of course is in so many ways, but you are building a lot of really, really useful skills right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my response, that very similar to what you're getting at, Sam, is that it's not like skills, not so much. It's actually maybe personality or inner traits that you go in with, because you really don't go in with many skills, honestly. The skills that served me well were just being outgoing and curious. That served me well, just being outgoing, and then people remember you and you get more information and you get that feedback and affirmation. That was a double-edged sword. The other skill is being able to pretend until I could make it so. I cannot tell you how many jobs I had. I had no idea.
Yeah.
War story or no war story? War story.
Yeah. So
I got hired into, so I had a great little gig at a foreign exchange company, in-house counsel and chief compliance officer, 3 days a week. I had three kids at home. It was really great. And by a small bank, anybody can see it in my LinkedIn, so it's not a secret, Jameson Bank, which was at a time when there was the sense that the banks had to, which shouldn't be the main players. There should be some niche banks. So Jameson was a foreign exchange company that got a banking license, much to their shock and unpreparedness. So they recruited me heavily, heavily, heavily. And they needed a chief compliance officer and would, again, I, an in-house counsel, that I've said, I'm not going to bring my legal skills for you to use unless you give me that role. So I was a little concerned about being, it's a big leap in going from being doing compliance for a foreign exchange company to doing it for a bank, because there are extra layers of regulation, many, and I didn't know what they were. So I was scared to death, and you know, basically got a kick in the ass from my husband, who said, just, you know, you are crazy. They are offering you this. It's a big job. Take it. So I took it, scared to death. And the first day that I started, is when I discovered, despite this heavy recruitment, several rounds of interviews and so on, that they were actually they were in a lot of trouble with OSFI. They'd had a terrible review. They were on special conditions, close watch. Their previous chief compliance officer had not left under the best conditions. But they didn't tell me any of this, which I was really angry about, to be honest. It seemed like a bait and switch. So not only am I coming into a job that I know nothing about, like, honestly, I was so scared to take, I knew nothing about, I find out OSFI wants to see me in 2 weeks, which I got 30 days with the action plan on how I was going to dig this bank out of there. Like page after page. I got it afterwards, page after page of findings. I'm like, yeah, this is relevant to me. You know what I mean? I to be honest, I went back to the legal recruiter. And I actually thought of quitting. Like I did. I just thought, this is not what I bargained for. I'm learning something new, but I didn't think to be under the microscope right away. And then I think in a lot of us, anybody who's played sports for sure, you think that you can be the one that's going to make the change, right? You're going to be the one. You're going to dig them out of this hole. And yeah, I just like I buckled it and they were subsequently bought and by a bigger player. So obviously Jameson Bank became attractive again, not just because of me. Sorry, I shouldn't make it sound that way. But, all to say that an important skill was to just believe in yourself. And it's fine, you got it under control, you know, you know that as a lawyer, you are so well prepared. Like law school may seem so grueling to you right now and endless, but it is giving you immense reserves of ability to learn a lot of information in a short amount of time and, you know, regurgitate it in a coherent way you know, you are just, you're developing this amazing skill set to just do just about anything in your life. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you can kind of keep the surface looking unruffled, you will want, at one point, you'll know what you're doing. You absolutely will know what you're doing. So that was, I think, an important skill. Things I wish I'd learned earlier, skills I developed earlier, was, as I was saying, being outgoing was a bit double-edged. I needed to learn to put some brakes on the utter expression of my inner personality and thoughts. Nobody likes a smarty prince. Nobody wants to know that you have the answer. And like, I just, and I didn't, you know, I was young. I was very young when I went to law school. I think I was 21 or 20. I did the 2 years. So yeah, I was very young and I think, you know, and immature and of course thought I knew everything. So yeah, I took that into my early career and like a lot of my life, frankly, and it took it, I would say I was like 26, 27 before I started to smarten up and like nobody wants to hear my opinion on that, you know, like honestly. So that was, I had to learn diplomacy and restraint. You don't want to be remembered for the wrong things. Well, I never really learned office politics, to be honest, but I also didn't know there was such thing as office politics. So, I mean, fingers on the pulse, I still don't, but at least I know there are things afoot around me that I may not see. And so just be cognizant. And having fun is important. Even just know that people are watching you. So, you know.
Yeah. You have the best war stories. Yes.
Okay. Please. So this is something I wish I'd never done. Okay. I was articling. And so we had a dance. Part of the articling students' jobs was to stock the beer fridge. And then there was, I can't remember it was Thursday or Friday, but everybody would gather downstairs near the beer fridge. So we'd all drink beer. Okay, fine. But I wanted to show them this cool trick. I can't remember what it's called, but you punch a hole in the beer and it comes out the tube or something. But anyways, I thought it was really cool because you could show them that how quickly you could drink doing that. I was not hired back. That might have been the reason, right? Like, I just don't know. But what a stupid thing to do. Honestly, a thing that nobody needs to know I have. Yeah, so that kind of like just exercising more restraint. And this is something my mother would always very gently, you know, say, well, maybe you shouldn't have said that, dear. Or have you considered doing this, dear? And yeah, mom, you're right.
Mom's yeah. Yeah, listen to your mom. Listen to your mom.
Listen to your mom.
That's right.
She does know a thing or two. Yeah.
Yeah. Next week. Get ready now. Totally congrats.
I did not, no. But it is a hard push and pull to be able to feel like you can show your authentic self,
yes.
But also know that you're being monitored and you are being assessed. And frankly, as a lawyer, your greatest skill is your judgment. And so how are they assessing your ability to exercise good judgment? Yes, in your ability to
agree with that.
To manage your time and to prioritize and how you treat anyone you work with, junior, whomever, but it's also just other things. And you are being assessed on that because, again, as a lawyer, all you're doing is exercising judgment. All you're doing is you got to know the law, you got to provide advice, but you are exercising judgment in terms of how you approach whoever you work with, solve their legal problems. Important skills are definitely curiosity and genuine curiosity, not just I'm curious for I want to get somewhere. I want to, you know, get a job or I want to work with you. Like genuinely, like I'm just interested and I don't know why, like I don't care about this area of law otherwise, but I'm just genuinely interested with a client. I don't know anything about your business. I want to know everything about it because I'm genuinely curious. Like that really, really, really resonates with clients when you show and demonstrate genuine interest in their problems and in them. Certainly, communicating, and I think all three of us have said this, your job is to know your audience. And Sam, I feel like being a performer, like, you know, this especially well, know your audience and who you're communicating. Cause sometimes it isn't always sophisticated. A lot of times it is, but even I've had to appear before judges and they will say, counsel, tell it to me like I'm a six. Don't tell me any case law. Just tell it to me like I'm a 6-year-old. So even in front of what you would perceive or you would expect to be a sophisticated audience, you may be forced to adjust your manner of communication. Communicate very complex concepts succinctly, clearly, and in a manner that your audience understands. It does, you know, the 5 million cases, you know, the whole evolution. Who cares? Whoever is asking you for a legal opinion, they're usually asking for a reason. And it's generally not because they're interested in that background. They have a private practice or an in-house. And really, I think one thing I wish I better is say no. It's really hard. It's really hard when you're, it's very, very, very difficult. I don't know that I would have been because that takes professional confidence, but being able to say no, it sometimes helps you because if you say yes to everything, it can taking on more than you expect. You could be stretching yourself in ways that you even instinctually know are, is not right. And really you do need to say no sometimes. And that's the responsible thing to do. And also like a little bit of resilience, you know, knowing, and that is a little bit of a skill you just have to earn. Whatever happens, things don't go according to plan. You just pick yourself up and keep going. I definitely think part of being a lawyer is getting very, and to your point, it is a bit of Alice, you're like faking it till you make it. Like just keep, it is about getting really accustomed to getting something on your desk and being like, I have no idea what this is. And it's not that that ever changes. I've been practicing for over like a decade and like, it still happens where I'll be like, well, where to begin? Like I am at the, I'm going to Google this stage, really that feeling of like, what possible regulatory framework or what case law would apply to this. Yeah. It's just to get more familiar with that feeling. And it's a really hard feeling coming out of law school where you kind of like these issues in a fact scenario. And law to me over like in my years of practice is just job after job getting something where I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. I have no idea. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know what area of law this is.
That's your inside voice. Yeah.
But being like, but also I think over time developing confidence.
Yeah.
And you do, and you always do. And you, and to your point, Alice, you're developing superb skills and a baseline to say like, I've been thrown, a million things have been thrown at me and I've sorted it out. I've started a class being like, what are, is this professor talking about? I have no idea. And at the end of it, you can complete an exam and you can generally recite some important facts. So like having that confidence is important.
I think too, just like on that point, utilizing every resource available to you before. So as a junior lawyer, often you're who in my experience have generally been happy to receive questions so long as all of your resources have been sort of expensed before doing that. And it's so true that so often I'm every day going, yep, about things that I have absolutely no idea about. But I'm sure there's somebody else who electronic resources that are available to you. And also that being flexible in, you'll all know, so when you're writing your exams, different profs have different expectations. They have different ways they like their responses written. They have different things that they're looking for. And that will be true of clients and senior lawyers that you're working for. And sort of like being adaptable to know who wants what from you is also really useful, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I heard a lot of different skills. I feel like the one that resonated the most with me is probably the stress management one. I think all three of you touched on that. I know that that's really hard to do at kind of any phase of your career. So nice to hear that that's normalized. I think we have time for one more quick question. A, what would you say is the most rewarding part of your career? Alice again?
Sure. I'm glad you skipped the other question because the most challenging part of my career is not probably something you want to hear about as young lawyers. So that's good call. yes, in the interest of time. No, it's great. I'd say finally ticking over, I felt I had some dominance, knowledge, confidence, finally finding that niche. Like you do find your niche moving along, but you will find your place. And you know it when you know it. And just finally for me was finding that area where I knew I was performing at my peak. I had something to offer finally to an employer and others. I knew that I was really good at what I do. I'm good at what I, it's such a great feeling. It makes your career so rewarding and you really get to flex yourself, flex your skills, be creative. It's a wonderful feeling when you, yeah, that was year 20.
Yeah, sure. I'm not fully in like feeling like I know everything, but I do feel like I have an area. It sounds so trite, like, oh, helping people. But genuinely, as a lawyer, you experience at a regulator being with someone who is trying to understand what is often, and this is not just in securities law. I think this applies in many different areas of law. Something that is dense and opaque, understand, and being that person where someone's like, just please decode it. I don't understand. And to be able to have, to be able to provide that, it's so rewarding. It's such a nice feeling to be like, you're a trusted advisor. I trust your judgment. I also trust you to communicate, again, back to the understand, but also is like relevant to me, not just communicating for the purposes of communicating, but pick up the things about this really dense, opaque area of law that is relevant to the audience. It's really rewarding. It's such a nice feeling to say like, I am not just understanding this really complex area of law, but applied in, and again, to my point about why I like practicing in business law, in a way that I see like, oh, this totally way you instruct advisors, the way they give advice, all of that. Like, it's so, again, really tangible. I find that really, really validating. And I also think another great part is just being, is really great. Like you're getting there. And when you're called to the bar, but it's also like, welcome to the club. We're all here. We're all rooting for you. Mm-hmm. And you come in a long line of other senior lawyers who have rooted for me and have supported me. And it's a really nice place, I think, generally a place and a club to be part of.
I find the most rewarding thing about the job here, sort of like discipline and hard work did not equal success. So much of, and there are aspects of this in this career too, but so much about that career was in the hands of other people, and a lot of it was really sort of arbitrary. And so I find it really rewarding that I know that, and of course there could be like, you're constantly climbing. But if I work hard, I will be building my skills, which will make me a better lawyer, which will lead me to being successful in this profession. And I find just sort of that as a concept really rewarding. I found that same thing rewarding about just like learning at law school. I also find the mentorship piece really rewarding. I am where I am to me when I was in law school and a student. And so sort of recruitment and mentorship, I think, completely shapes, the young, the incoming junior talent completely. So I think it's really important. And there's, our firm has a huge sort of, puts a huge impetus on that. And I find it really rewarding to like work with students. And I find, yeah, that's all.
CNIB is hitting the road to bring its innovative programs and technology to you. Drop in to meet CNIB staff and learn more about free programs and read deafblind or have low vision. Explore assistive tech with hands-on product demos and workshops. Tuesday, September 1st, 2026, 10:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Kingston Public Library, 130 Johnson Street, Kingston.
Musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.com for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Traffic's a nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in for a meeting. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. 11 p.m. to midnight for Shed Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're not afraid to get a little...
It's 3 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we've got Jazz Boulevard.